5 minutes. Is there anyone on the telephone line? Very good. So hold on, and then we'll start shortly. Thank you.
This is the SSAC public session. We're going from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., July 18th, 2013, in Hall 4C.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Security and Stability Advisory Committee Activities Update, the ICANN-Durban meeting in South Africa on 18 July 2013. Is there anyone on the ESSAC teleconference line? All right, then. I think we'll go ahead and begin. This is Julie Headland, ICANN staff, and I'd like to turn over the meeting to Patrick Faltstrom, the chair of the ESSAC.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome, everyone, to the open meeting of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee in the ICANN meeting in Durban. Next slide, please. What we will talk about today is, first of all, the general overview of the status of ESSAC at the moment. We will present the latest report, SAC 59, a letter to the board regarding interdisciplinary studies. We will present an update on the status of the variant work party. which, thanks to very hard work from ESSAC members, we do have consensus on the resolutions and recommendations, which I will mention what they are. We will then get update by Russ Mundy on the root key role of a work party and from Medic AKO on abuse of DNS work party. Next slide, please. So ESSAC was initiated in 2001 and began operation in 2002. Our charter is to advise ICANN community and board on matters relating to security and integrity of the Internet's naming and address allocation systems. We have 39 members, and they are appointed to ICANN board for 3-year terms, so we're reviewing 1/3 of the members each year. The current activities that we do in the form of work parties or working groups, but we call them work parties in ESSAC, are the ones that you see on the slide: ESSAC membership, DNSSEC workshop. Some of them, like the membership and the DNSSEC workshop, are sort of standing work parties working with specific issues. Others, like, for example, identifier abuse metrics and root key rollover, are groups that are supposed to and asked to come to a conclusion, either make a decision that a document should be produced or come to a conclusion that no document is needed. So you see, for example, regarding the IGF workshop, we have had a workshop a couple of years at the Internet Governance Forum, and we also plan that those activities also in the form of work parties. Next slide, please. The publications, if we go through them by category during 2012 and 2013 to remind people where there are recommendations that are outstanding, we have been doing a large number of reports on security and abuse issues related to DNS, where the last one has to do with interdisciplinary studies that we will that I will present shortly. Next slide, please. We have one publication on internationalized domain names, which is an advisory on delegation of single character internationalized domain name top level domains. That's a long title. But as I said, we have another one related to IDN or variants coming out shortly. Two reports on registering data WHOIS, which are comments on the WHOIS review team. And here are examples where we are very happy that the reports are included in, for example, the work brought into the expert working group. Next, please. So I would like to start by asking if anyone have any questions on ESSAC operation. We hopefully, one of the reasons why I go through, yes, sir. Oh, yes, Marilyn, sorry.
Thank you. My question is actually just a, I'm sure this is true, but I need to verify it. The session is being transcribed. Is this correct?
Yeah, it's not live transcription. It will be transcribed.
Yes. Thank you. Hmm.
Okay, so SAC 59, ESSAC letter to the ICANN board regarding interdisciplinary studies. Next, please. So there have been a couple of reports from ESSAC specifically related to, that recommend studies to be made. And specifically, we have recommended interdisciplinary studies to be conducted related to the expansion of the root zone. So what we are referring to are what we have called interdisciplinary studies, specifically then for the root zone scaling issues. So what happened was that the 13th of September 2012, ICANN Board of Directors asked ESSAC to provide advice on how interdisciplinary studies of security and stability implications from expanding the root zone more than an order of magnitude should be carried out and whom else should be consulted. So what we did was that we wrote SAC 59, where we provide ESSAC advice on the composition of those interdisciplinary studies, the teams, the broad topics and specific examples that we think should be looked at or inspected, basically explained what we meant by that, those recommendations. Next slide, please. So the overall goal of the studies, we found, has to be specifically in two areas. One is to engage with communities that might not have been fully consulted by previous investigations. So whenever a new investigation is conducted, it's very important to look at who were consulted and who should one contact to be able to make sure that all the studies together get a full coverage of the topic. The other one has to do with similar kind of thing, investigate various issues that had not been identified by previous studies. So next slide, please. So SAC59, from our perspective, yes, it is on the response to a very specific question about interdisciplinary studies related to the root zone, expansion of the root zone. But what we did was we had to try to write it at the same time in a generic way so that it would be possible to apply the same kind of guidelines when issuing studies on other topics as well. Any questions on that? Or any SAC members that would like to expand on the issue? Okay. So one thing I didn't do, let me do that now when Ram arrived, that prompted me to it. I didn't present us who tried to move this ship forward. Patrick Feldstrom, I'm chair of SAC, and to my left I have Jim Galvin, and to his, which is the vice chair, and to his left is Ram Mohan, which is liaison from SAC to the board. To my right I have Julie Hedlund, and which is one of the three support staff. We also have Steve Sheng, not here, and Barbara Roseman, which is still in the United States. So, the IDN variant TLD work party. The SAC work party is responding to a board resolution from 11th of April 2013, where the board requests that by the 1st of July 2013, interested supporting organizations, advisory committees, provide staff with any input and guidance they might have to be factored into implementation of the recommendations from the report on user experience implications of active variant TLDs. So what we did was that we went through that report and found that address some of the issues in this user experience guidelines, we had to look a little bit broader on some of the other documents related to LDR to be able to get full coverage. So the report comments on the label generation rules procedure for the root zone, the repertoire and variant generation rules, the change process of LDRs, and other user experience report recommendations. We do provide comments on related to the following issues, and some of these are for people in SAC and people work with security and stability. It's a little bit like motherhood and apple pie, but it's really important. It was important for us to explain how we believe these principles should be applied to something like internationalized domain names, and that includes the conservative principle, the process, how to handle a situation in which there is these disagreements, how to handle backward compatibility when various algorithms have to be updated, the applicability of the root label generation rules to second level and higher levels in the domain name tree, and also we had a look at what we believe the operational readiness of ICANN's new TLD functions are with respect to variants. Next slide, please. So the work party has produced a document for full SAC review until July 17, and we declared consensus yesterday. And what now will happen is that we will finalize the actual document for publication, which is a pure editorial issue, but it's still the case that it takes a little bit of time to get all the paperwork together. But what we have decided to do in SAC, just to be able to have as much discussion as possible on this topic, is to have me tell you what the recommendations are. So we have 14 recommendations. and they are the following. Recommendation one, the root zone must use one and only one set of label generation rules. Recommendation two, ICANN must maintain a secure, stable, and objective process to resolve cases where some members of the community, for example, an applicant for a TLD, does not agree with the result of an LDR calculation. Recommendation three, ICANN should concentrate foremost on the rules for the root zone. Recommendation four, ICANN should coordinate and encourage adoption of these rules at the second and higher levels as a starting point through updating the IDN implementation guidelines and recognizing that a modified version of these rules or review or appeals processes must be required to address special cases for the first and second levels. Maintaining and publishing a central repository of rules for second level domains for all TLDs, encouraging TLD operators to publish their label generation rules publicly in this repository maintained by ICANN, and conducting specific training and outreach sessions in cooperation with GTLD and CCTLD operators who intend to launch IDN second-level domains or IDN TLDs with a focus on consistency of user experience. And the outreach should include, among others, registrants, end users, and application developers. Recommendation five, be very conservative on code points allowed in the root zone. Recommendation six, because the implications of removing delegations from the root zone can have significant non-local impact, new rules added to label generation rule set must, as far as possible, be backward compatible so that new versions of the LDR do not produce incompatible results with historical existent activations. Recommendation 7. That was a little bit Swedish there. Should ICANN decide to implement safeguards, it should seek to distinguish two types of failure modes when a user expects a variant to work but it is not implemented: denial of service versus misconnection. Recommendation 8. Process needs to be developed to activate variants from allocatable variants in LDR. Recommendation 9. ICANN must ensure that EBRO providers support variant TLDs and that parity exists for variant support in all relevant systems and functions associated with new TLD components. Recommendation 10. In the current design of rights protections related to the TMCH process, there is a risk of homographic attacks. The roles of the involved parties, specifically registrars, registries, and TMCH, related to matching must be clear. Recommendation 11. When registries calculate variant sets for use in validation during registrations, such calculations must be done against all the implemented LDRs covering that script in which the label is applied for. Recommendation 12. The matching algorithm for TMCH itself must be improved. Recommendation 13. The TMCH must add support for IDN variant TLDs, particularly during the TM claims service. A name registered under a TLD that has a variant TLD should trigger trademark holder notifications for the registration of the name in the TLD and its allocated variant TLDs. Recommendation 14, ICANN should ensure that the number of strings that are activated is conservative. So those are the 14 recommendations. Any questions? Marilyn?
It's going to be a standard question, Marilyn Cade. It's going to be a standard question, so let me ask it now. One of the things I'm noticing is that in the past it may have been okay to just publicize information because certain categories of players in the distributed environment knew where to go to look for this updated information. But we're living in a world now with a very widely distributed set of web hosting entities, very small companies, the emergence of a lot of new players from Africa, from Latin America. Has the ESSEC talked about, and that's why I'm going to ask the question, then we can come back to it later, has the ESSEC talked about new mechanisms and new approaches rather than the pull approach? And the idea that you're going to have to find ways to publicize awareness about where to go for these kinds of change information in a kind of evolving applications environment.
Yes, we are thinking about it, and we do understand it's a really hard problem. We are in this as part. Let me take a couple of examples. The first one is that we do have a work party not related to what I just presented that are looking at, for example, the public suffix list on domain, on, because what we have seen and got reports on is that it is problematic for even ccTLDs to know that they should report changes in their policy to wherever the suffix list, wherever that is maintained. And knowing all of these processes, like you point out, is a difficult issue. So we have work looking at, for example, that is one example of something that we have ongoing. Another example, which goes back to this report, is that we are touching on to this when we are looking at the various different kind, the risk for different LGRs, label generation rules, for the same script in different TLDs. And that is something that is why we are recommending that there is that I can provide a central repository for those LGRs, so it is easier for the various registries and everyone that needs to access those LGRs to be able to fetch them from a central repository. That is the mitigation mechanism for this specific thing with the multiple LGR rules that are coming out to make things easier. That said, it doesn't solve the question of pull-push mechanisms that you're talking about. But in this case, we came to the conclusion it is better to have a pull mechanism instead of everyone talking to everyone. Okay. But we do also, in this report, as a recommendation, we strongly point at the need for outreach to be able to educate people, because there is a need for everyone involved that need to calculate label generation rules to be able to do that with the rules, with all the rules that exist. That's also why we are to solve the problem regarding variants and the trademark clearinghouse, that we need to be clear, that we believe needs to be clarified quite extensively. That's why we give, in general, two different alternatives to do that. Either the requirement is the one that send things to the trademark clearinghouse, including both the ones that send data to the trademark clearinghouse, but specifically the one that want to do queries to the trademark clearinghouse. Either the client, the one searching, calculate all the variants and send all the variants to the trademark clearinghouse to see whether there is a match. That means that the client need to have access to the label generation rules for all label generation rules covering the script that specific string consists of, not only label generation rules that, for example, specific registries using themselves. Or the label generation rules need to be implemented inside the trademark clearinghouse. So when you send a string to the trademark clearinghouse, it's not only sort of calculating that specific string, but it also matches all the variants. So that is one example where it needs to be clarified. Is the calculation of variants a responsibility for the one that do lookups, or is it something that will be implemented in the trademark clearinghouse? From SR perspective, we don't have much view of which method will be chosen. We have pros and cons for both methods. Both of them have significant pros and significant cons, and we leave to people to read the report. Julie?
I just want to see who joined on the teleconference bridge. Did someone join the teleconference? Thank you.
Any more questions? Ram? Or clarification from ESSEC members?
Thank you. This is Ram Mohan. One of the things that I wanted to emphasize is on the variant document, on the IDN document that ESSAC has produced, while this studies the user experience report, there are more things going on than just this, and this may not be the final piece of work from ESSAC when it comes to IDNs and the variant program, the LGR, the generation. There's a lot of work that is teed up. So this is in my opinion, quite a reasonably authoritative set of recommendations. But it feels to me like there's more that might be coming. Many of these have implementation impact, and some of these may result in changes to the rules or the contracts or applicant guidebook type of things. We in ESSAC, in the work party and in ESSAC, we've also been cognizant that this is not a GTLD problem. This is a TLD oriented issue, and recognize that there are things that the CC community, the CC TLD community, also has to take into account, where ICANN doesn't have authority or control, but there are strong technical recommendations and guidelines, and we need to find a way that the CC community also can adopt or at least embrace some of these recommendations. Thanks.
Thank you, Ram. Anyone else? Of course, this would be much easier to discuss when the report actually is released. But we did discuss whether we did have some discussion on whether we should at least inform about what the recommendations are to be able to discuss more freely and let ESSAC members discuss more freely during the last hours of the ICANN meeting. And we decided that this was the best way to move forward. So with that, let's move to the next presentation. Russ, please.
Thank you, Patrick. Russ Money reporting on the Root Key Rollover Work Party update. This is work that is underway but not yet complete, but we wanted to give the community a chance to see what we've done so far and are considering that may show up in the end. So the primary purpose is to examine the issues and consequences and mechanisms and things that could occur as a result of what we were calling and generally is referred to as the rollover of the root key. What this actually means is an additional key signing key beyond the one that was initially used to sign the root zone in 2010 will be inserted into the root zone as a second key signing key. It will, at some point in time, the old key signing key will be removed. So in simple words, that's the mechanism. Now, what actually occurs and what are the impacts is what this work party is exploring. And so we're looking at the various scenarios in which you could do it. And the reason that I pointed out that a new key would be put in is I don't think anyone believes that there's a scenario that says you rip out the old root key and not have the root zone signed for a while, and then at some future point you put it in and re-sign the root zone. Not practical, okay? That's a scenario that in theory might be possible, but it's really not one that's being considered by anyone. And the exploration of the complexities and complications that occur as you go through this process of changing the root key. And the fact that this is the root key is important for a number of reasons. One, there's only one root zone, and this is the key signing key for the root zone, which means it's used to as the top of all of the DNS security, anytime you're doing validation, anytime you're establishing chain of trust, for all practical purposes, this is the key that's used as the starting point for your chain of trust in doing DNSSEC validation. So IANA and other people that it's ICANN with the IANA function, VeriSign as the root zone content manager, and zone and ZSK, Zone Signing Key Administer, and the U.S. Department of Commerce, NTIA, are the three core bodies that are involved in the actual operational function of this. IANA led a public consultation. It closed about May 31st, and there's going to be another consultation. We don't have specific time on that, but it'll be a public consultation to take further inputs and comments. My personal expectation is that there will be some amount of information put out by the set of operational activities that says something before they actually do their next public consultation. But they may decide to hold a second public consultation before putting information out. But it's coming soon. Next slide. So what's the work party looking at? Well, you can see it there, the operational roles of both the zone signing key and the key signing key, because they are two different organizations. What are the impacts? A bit of description about the motivation for doing the rollover of the key signing key. What are the risks? Because there's always risks associated with something like this. And the mechanisms available for it. There's two basic mechanisms. One's automated and one's really basically a manual mechanism for doing rollovers. And what are the impacts of those two sets of mechanisms? And are there other technical impacts? The DNS response size consideration is something that we are examining, and we'll have more to say on that particular issue, but because of the nature of DNS and the DNS queries and the limitations of middle boxes and IPv6 and things of that nature. Next. So the work party will produce a full document as a work party, and in accordance with the normal ESSAC procedures, once the work party has completed their document, then it goes to the full ESSAC. The full ESSAC does a review, can modify, can decide that it's not worthy of publication and not publish anything, can add recommendations, change the recommendations. So the step that we're at is trying to complete the document within the work party, then turn it over to the full ESSAC, and then the full ESSAC will decide what actually happens with the document next.
Thank you very much. Any questions? The question is what the time frame is.
The time frame, we do not have an explicit schedule. We personally, as the work party chair, co-chair with Matt Larson, I want to get it finished and out as soon as we can. I'm personally hoping we will have it published before the next meeting, the next ICANN meeting, and sooner if possible. I would like to target within a month to 6 weeks, but that's just me. There's no commitment or prediction.
Any other questions? In that case, let's move to the next work party, and that is the abuse of the DNS, and I ask Merrick Ikeo to present.
Good morning. I'm Merrick Ikeo. Next slide, please. So the objective of this work party to bring renewed focus on the issue of DNS amplification attacks, and also as we look at work that ESSAC has done, some documents that had been written over 10 years ago, we find that some of these recommendations have not been implemented. And so we want to bring renewed focus and also update on some of the current situations. The targeted audience for this work is primarily DNS operators, both authoritative and recursive operators, and both in the ISP and the enterprise space. As a side effect, really, network operators in general also will hopefully read this document because it pertains to some of their responsibilities. And the goal is to highlight the current ongoing problems with the increased scope of DNS amplification attacks. We referenced two pieces of work, specifically ESSAC 004 and 008, which are recommendations that we feel really should be followed. We also will enumerate irresponsible behaviors which are causing this internet instability, and the irresponsible behaviors really talks about the fact that people are not implementing these best current practice to help secure the DNS infrastructure. And we also will provide updated recommendations to foster greater DNS infrastructure stability. Next slide, please. The primary issues that we are discussing are the increased scale and impacts of attacks, the factors that make these amplification attacks possible, prior work on mitigation techniques, and we also have recommended steps to address unresolved critical issues. Next slide, please. So what we're focusing on are steps that DNS and network operators should take. One of them is, you know, how to resolve the issues that make such large-scale denial of service attacks possible. How do we prevent network spoofing to the greatest extent possible? And where are network operators and DNS operators, you know, what can they do? To identify unmanaged and inadvertently open recursive resolvers and close them. So what tools, what mechanisms are available, and, you know, how do people recognize them? And also how to detect networks that deploy spoofable networks and run unmanaged open recursive resolvers, because you first have to be aware that this situation is occurring in your environment before you actually will take action to do something about it. Next slide, please. So the next steps are that as soon as the document is finalized, as with what Russ had mentioned in this work also, we will then send for the full ESSAC for review. And the hope is that it will be approved and published. And when that happens, we will renew efforts to evangelize and socialize the importance of actually deploying best current practice security measures for the overall internet health and stability. And any questions?
You have to use the microphone because we have people remote.
And for
Yeah, and also for the to be able to do the transcription afterwards.
Of course. My name is Jonathan Zook, and I'm from the Association for Competitive Technology. This is a little bit of a segue from Marilyn's comment, which I'm inspired by the idea of evangelizing and socializing the importance of best practices. And I'm wondering what the mechanisms are that are in place to do that, and if more is needed as more and more of these things need to be evangelized and socialized in a broader community. I guess I'm sort of asking a similar question, which is whether or not anything new needs to happen. Does there need to be an ESSAC report on how to socialize the results of ESSAC reports? How do we take you out of the shadows?
Yeah, the intent is not that ESSAC will by themselves socialize, but actually ICANN staff. And ICANN, the security group within ICANN, is already in process and has been for a couple of years of socializing, educating on security issues. So I expect that they will continue to do so. And also, as we are actually, you know, making this work, you know, the different constituents aware, especially during this meeting, our hope is that they will also be able to evangelize within their communities.
And I guess just as a follow-up, do you feel like that the processes that are in place are sufficient? I mean, I'm wondering, does the ESSAC need to request specific feedback from ICANN on its advice, similar to the way the GAC does now, so that you know that things have been absorbed and accepted, and if not, why not? And should that process be more formalized than it has been to date?
I can try to answer that. This is something that was pointed out already on the previous review also of ESSAC and ESSAC operation. And one of the reasons why that tracking has been hard has also been just because we have not kept track of what kind of recommendation we did. And it's all what made. And it's also the case that what our recommendations, our documents, has been a little bit fluffy and a little bit unclear what the actual which means that evaluating whether it is the case that recommendations has been taken into account is not just a simple search in a text file or something. So over the years, both we and SSAC has been more clear on what recommendations we have, and also ICANN board has been started to be more clear on how they take care of recommendations, which of course includes that they say, no, we don't think anything has to be done, so nothing falls onto the floor. That said, we have been looking at internally inside SSAC, and we are not satisfied. Let me make that clear. We are not satisfied with the way our recommendations are followed up. But to be able to solve that problem, we at the same time know that both we and board and others need to find, if nothing else, a mechanism that makes that easier. And that is something that we have brought up and, for example, did bring up with the HRT2 team, this is something that is of concern, specifically when we see that certain recommendations have not been taken into account, or now several years afterwards, there is a question of whether they were taken into account or not. And if it is the case that it is discovered that something actually should be taken into account, wait a second, maybe now 3 years afterwards, it's not possible to implement that specific recommendation. And how do you resolve that kind of issue? So we have sort of two different issues here. We have to make sure, we have to find a way of making sure that it's better from today and forward, but we also have a cleaning process to look back and see if there to try to detect whether there is something that is still to be done. So just because all of those discussions happens, including with HRT2, I cannot answer your question whether that kind of more formal communication or other kind of thing like GAC, we don't know whether that is the solution for SSAC. But that we need to keep track of it better, that is something we know. Bruce?
Yeah, thanks, Patrick. And I think, you know, both yourself, Jonathan, and Marilyn raised an interesting issue about sort of communication and engagement as it relates to these outcomes. I think the board has tended to take action on things that are very clear and straightforward. So if it's a particular action, might be related to IANA, or might be related to the operation of the root zone, or might be related to the contracts between ICANN and GTLD registries and registrars, so there's DNSSEC provisions, etc. But there's a lot of other things in the reports that are really, for example, advice to registrants on how to protect themselves from domain hijacking. You know, they're not directly contracted by ICANN. It's not something that ICANN can directly take action on. It's really something the community needs to think about. Likewise, DNS resolvers. Yeah, many, many people operate DNS resolvers, and they're not registries, registrars, or ICANN. And so the question is, how do you, with those things that you can't directly control, how do you properly advise people and get that message out? And I think the focus of engagement at ICANN has been more about telling people at a very high level who ICANN is, etc. But there's not a lot of the next layer down, which says, well, now you know who ICANN is, what should we do about that? You know, and I often find this in interactions with people that you have you could be meeting at a high level with a government official and you explain ICANN and that's fine, but that's it. You know, it doesn't go to the next level down, which is, what do we expect you to do about that?
Marika, is there a comment directly on this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so just one comment pertaining to your question is that within this work party, I mean, we're very, we want to create some concise recommendations. And also, I don't want to preempt the recommendations, but there is one that we're considering where we really are thinking through what kind of recommendation do we give for ICANN specifically. And so, you know, it needs to make sense, though, and it needs to make sense so that ICANN's constituency will actually, you know, be able to act on it. So we are very much thinking about this.
Thank you. Steve?
Steve Mattel, it's related to this, do we know why these recommendations have not been implemented? I mean, from all the discussion here, it sounds as though the focus is that people don't know about them or don't understand them, but could there be other reasons why, and has that been looked into?
As I said, in some cases, of course, there might be recommendations that... Okay, let me take a step back. Our reports are written by SSAC, which have recommendations. Those recommendations are given to other bodies that then read the report and draw their own conclusions. By using that mechanism, we give full ability for people to completely ignore our recommendation. So I think in some cases, of course, it might have been the case that people made a conscious decision to not follow the recommendation, because when they read our report and draw conclusion, they came to different conclusion, or they had other input, and when they did their calculation, they came to a different solution, but they didn't record it, so we don't know why. Maybe this is a hypothetical situation, but I don't know, but that situation could happen. But so do we know why that is the case? No, we don't. America.
I was just going to make a comment that with this particular report, we are actually trying to put some information in that will help people to actually implement some of the recommendations, because partly sometimes it's an education issue.
Dan?
Dan York. A couple of responses, but my main question, Marijke, was, did I miss it? What is the time frame do you think this report will be out in?
We are striving to have it done at least by the end of the year, at the latest. But again,
Okay. I just wanted to say that the work that you outlined here, I mean, it certainly looks like we've had a lot of discussion within various different DNS-related forums outside of ICANN around these kind of issues, around amplification attacks and the issues there. And so I think this will be very welcome in those forums and certainly could be socialized, evangelized into those other areas and by those other areas. And as to the larger question you ask about why are people not deploying things, this is just a general issue. You know, I mean, I work for a group within the Internet Society focused on helping get accelerated deployment of IPv6 and DNSSEC, and we can talk long times about both of those. We can talk about routing issues and why people aren't using BCP38, you know, and I mean, there's a lot of those different issues, and I think we can come out with a long list of reasons why people don't work on, don't implement some of those security guidelines. And in many cases, we just don't know exactly why, but there's a long list.
Let me add, as the chair, I put myself to comment on on Medicare. Let me just add one thing that I think it is important for you to know, is that when we started to look at specifically a follow-up to SAC4, why people are not implemented it, we started to work on sort of an update to BCP4, and the conclusion, correct me if I'm wrong, was basically, no, we would say the same thing again. And a reprint, would that solve the problem? Probably not. And that's why it's such a hard problem to actually try to write some, try to understand. It's not understanding the problem Erica is working on in her working group. It's to understand what to write to get more traction this time. And that's why we have decided in SAC that as we have SAC4, everyone sort of know about the problem but has not implemented. This has to take time also to produce the report. And that's also one of the reasons why we are a little bit careful with saying when we are done. America. And then I have on the list Mikey, and then you, and then Jonathan, Ram. Okay.
Just one comment. I mean, we started this work early in the year, and when the March events happened, right, that created, a very huge, media focus on amplification attacks, I was extremely happy. Because I was like, great, because once this report comes out, people will actually recognize the relevance of it, and hopefully there will be a better impetus to actually deploy these recommendations.
Mikey?
This is Mikey O'Connor. I just want to add on to the specific issue and also the broader one. I think that one of the things that ESSEC might consider in its process of writing reports is putting a section at the end that says, here's who we need to tell pretty emphatically about this report. So, for example, on this issue, you ought to be talking to the ISPs. That's my constituency, since they have a little something to do with this. Not necessarily during the report, but during the rollout. And so I think that it's incumbent on people when they write reports, I'm saving my monotone stunt for the...
Okay, we have many people on the call here, so please come to the point.
But do please write a section of the report that says who needs to be informed and what do they need to do about it. An example is the one about the emergency action contact, which we drug out of one of your old reports during the IRTP, and we had to find it. Nobody told the GNSO.
Okay, time's up.
It's me. So my comment is similar to what Micah has mentioned. Like, if it's clear, okay, who this report is targeted and you want to distribute this information, then it would be really, really helpful for constituencies within the ICANN to help with the outreach, or maybe perhaps ICANN staff themselves can do something about it.
And can you tell us who you are for the transcript?
For the transcript, Izumi Okutani from JP NIC.
Jonathan?
I know we're pressed for time, and I know this is a specific discussion that's becoming a generalized one, but I want to make the same recommendation based on Bruce's comment, which is categorize. Here's the things that we think ICANN itself can unilaterally do, that and this is what we hope and expect them to do. But even if one of those things is making sure that something's evangelized through the evangelization arm of ICANN, then that might still be something that ICANN could do. It might be, I guess I would look for things that you could decide to do autonomously without a PDP, without structural changes to ICANN, to request funding for PR, change the structure, et cetera. I think it's just time to be more aggressive generally in terms of how your advice is taken in and received and track it. So that's just my recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you for the support. Ram?
Thank you. This input is very helpful, Ram Mohan, very helpful in better structuring our reports and our advice. To the specific issue of recommendations being implemented, I just wanted to report back to you. At the ICANN board level, one of the things that we do work very hard is to, and I do that as the liaison, the next liaisons will be doing the same thing, is to work with staff and with board members to convert our advice into actionable directives to staff. So you will have seen over the last few years reports coming out from ESSAC, and then shortly thereafter board resolutions that attempt to implement them. And we're trying to continue to do that and keep our recommendations actionable.
Thanks. Chris Chaplow, Business Constituency. ESSAC 44, A Registrant Guide to Protecting Domain Name Registration Accounts, is an excellent report. It's written for the layman. It's only got one problem. It looks like an ESSAC report, and it needs to go to the communications department to be turned into something that looks palatable, and the business constituency and the other constituencies can then hand that out to members, to small and large businesses and individuals alike. Thank you.
Did you want to say something? Did I miss you when you were in the TV?
You
in
did.
The queue? Yes, that's what I thought.
Marilyn Caden, I want to say I really want to reinforce the critical importance of the engagement of the CSO team, and I see Patrick here. And the reason I am mentioning it is I'm going to say I just got back from Lagos, Nigeria. We had great support from the CSO team on doing a DNSSEC workshop, but that is not enough. We have a very strong, highly interested business user community. They are not and are not going to become contracted parties. They are not the DNS sector. They are building and running the internet. And some of these things need to go into the portfolio of the CSO, because this is the kind of thing that training done by the CSO is really going to make a difference. It's going to reach those ISPs, web hosters, and small businesses in developing countries, and that's probably going to be a budget opportunity.
Anything else? In that case, even though we sort of floated away into, as you pointed out, Jonathan, a more general discussion, now we have some time for general questions, if there is anyone that have any more general discussion, other topics that we might work on. Maybe there might be some ESSAC members that would like to point something out.
Robert.
Jonathan. Robert, Jonathan, Marilyn.
I just wanted to build on something that you mentioned, Patrick, in regards to the Internet Governance Forum. This issue of the report that Mary Kay mentioned is going to be one of the topics for discussion at the Internet Governance Forum that we have planned, but in a more broader context. So that's another space in terms of for evangelization, getting out to the community that we're doing as well. And we had planned that session months before this discussion took place.
Jonathan?
So to take the general and make it more specific, I guess
59 seems to be, as you say, a reiteration of previous recommendations to some extent, and you pondered whether or not that was a sufficient way to draw attention to things by reissuing the same advice. Do you have a sense of what the implementation strategy is from ICANN for those recommendations related to domain collisions, dotless domains, and some of the things that are discussed? What's your sense of how that's being taken in and absorbed at this point?
Well, I think what I know is what was presented yesterday at the update on security stability resilience from ICANN. And so those reports are received by ICANN, and we are asked to, just like with many other things, but specifically, for example, the name collision issues, we are asked to explicitly monitor what's going on there to be able to write reports if you find that being needed and report back. So what I'm saying is I cannot answer your question because I don't feel your question is targeted to us at this point in time because we are not holding the token for action.
Okay. Let me try to target it better then. Do you feel that that study and the work surrounding it is sufficient reaction to the advice that you've given on this issue?
That is something that we're currently evaluating, so we don't know yet.
Okay.
Marilyn?
I think my question builds on the underlying points that Jonathan was making. I have I asked to see the terms of reference for the dotless domain study, and to my amazement learned that the terms of reference for that study were not actually, in my view, fully under the direction of the ESSEC. And I'm interested in the exchange and interrelationship between the ESSEC related to its reports and recommendations and how the staff then takes that and develops the terms of reference and goes out and procures a study. So I gather from your response that you may not be able to say anything more about that, but I'm going to make a point. I would assume that terms of reference for studies of this nature should be put out for public comment. My observation is sometimes the terms of reference seem to be so narrowly written that the community is not able to understand fully the risk that are potentially emerging in those studies.
Regarding dotless domain, we wrote a report, and that resulted in a number of board resolutions. And one of the board resolutions were targeted at ICANN staff to conduct a study regarding dotless domains. I try to find the actual board resolution now at the moment, but I think that is. And then after board resolution, request ICANN staff to consult a study. There are, in some cases, the board asks staff to work in cooperation with ESSEC. And in that case, I think we have good cooperation. But in some cases, the board asks staff to conduct a study and then ESSEC to sort of look at what's happening or look at the same problem. And then we are not cooperating explicitly, but sometimes we do have liaison, both the security team and others. Exactly how it was here, it's Thursday of an ICANN week, I need to go back. I don't have the actual board resolution top of my head, but I do see the traces of requests from ICANN board for staff to issue a report and a study on dotless domain, given the feedback during the public comment period on the report. Ram, do you want to? Maybe you remember better.
Yeah, I do. In fact, on dotless domains, the board actually had made two resolutions. One was to simply acknowledge the report, but the second, it directed ICANN staff to consult with relevant communities regarding implementation of the resolution of recommendations, and no later than September 1 of last year, to provide a briefing paper to the board, which details technical policy and legal issues that may arise as a result of implementing SAC 53. So that was what the board actually resolved more than a year ago.
Hi, sorry, Paul Foodie.
You're too close.
Okay, is that better? Paul Foodie, sorry about that. The dotless domain things is an inevitability. We've been using dotless domains to a large degree ever since .com came out, and what's happened is that the various browsers have interpreted that and they've said, well, this is a default .com. I've spoken to Rod Rasmussen about why dotless domains can't happen, and he's explained in some detail that there's all sorts of problems in terms of the hardware. But surely is it not possible for ESSAC to come up with some sort of software fix so that the inevitability of dotless domains can be used without causing problems? You know, maybe even link it to the trademark clearing, so that when somebody puts in whatever term they're going to put in, it doesn't cause the problems that you guys are now foreseeing.
You should take that, Patrick.
Or Rod.
Clearly, my explanation wasn't satisfactory. So.
So I think this is something that I'm happy to talk to you afterwards, because the issues that we point out are pretty serious combinations of protocol specifications and implementation of those protocols. So it was also and regarding the actual protocol specifications, the Internet Architecture Board released a report a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago, or three, where they explained the various issues related to dotless domains from a protocol standpoint. This implies that one of the findings that we had in ESSAC is that implementations in software and hardware that do comply with the existing standards for the Internet, that is where we have the problem. It is not the case. So to be able to support dotless domains the way that in the ways that we lay out in our report, you must implement software in a way that violates internet protocol specifications. And that is why making the change or coming with the recommendation that you're talking about is extremely complicated. And that's also something that we are talking about, how long time it would take to replace all the software and hardware on the Internet that do comply with today's specifications.
So given that it's inevitable people seeing closed generics with, you know, which will be distinguished from words only by the dot, they will interpret that as the word. I mean, Deloitte have had dot Deloitte as their logo for the past 5 years or more, and nobody calls it Dr. Lloyd, then you're going to get the same problem. So is there no way that you can say that the requirement for closed generics is simply a requirement that is going to endanger the route to such a degree that you've got to just refuse them?
No, I think you're from our perspective and technical standpoint, you're mixing up multiple things. And I think to talk about at the same time is not really possible. But from a technical standpoint, as we laid out in our report, to have the domain name without, or it's not even domain name. You actually use a term or a word without a dot that you are using in your operating system. In many cases, whatever you are typing in, because it doesn't include a dot, it does not even hit the DNS.
Okay.
And that is among the worst implications. Now, time's up, and there is a new section that is coming up both here, and we need to, some of us go to different rooms. So thank you very much for coming, and I hereby declare the meeting closed.